Hey, this is the Broken Popcorn Series, and I am Angel Brooke. I have not done this in such a long time, and my son said I'm doing a bed with Stacy or bed with Angel Brooke. And I am so excited about the idea of being inspired to do something that pertains to healing, that pertains to my feelings about life, and just out there, just excited about this journey called life. And why I'm inspired is I have been listening and watching and people in journey and hearing things and just been so quiet and patient to expect that, you know, someone else would jump in and speak in terms of what's happening out in society. And another part is, like, so many podcasters are out. I started podcasting, I believe, in 2008 or maybe 2009. And then I would tape just listening to myself and then videotape while driving, crazy woman, from work, like going to work back and forth. And I would just talk about my feelings and making up little and do these 1 minute spiels. And then I just stopped. The desire for doing it had been challenging. Just directing myself into a vision had been challenging. I just wanted to just not speak anymore. And then I felt just bored by the idea of, like, just repeating repetitive things. But I don't know what's happening. I'm just excited about life. I'm just excited about just this new journey. I'm excited about speaking on things that I have within my spirit. And I've been going through some serious counseling. Right. And so doing some therapy work and doing some healing work and grounding myself into putting my feet down into the ground and really challenging every single aspect of my brain to the part of my feet to get to that new level. So I hope that you would want to enjoy that journey with me. And I hope that you get something from this. Honestly, if you decide to continue to be a part of this journey, you can definitely get in contact with me two different ways, either through the Broken Popcorn Series at gmail.com or aramtr@gmail.com. Leave your messages in and your questions if you have for me, and I will definitely answer it. I have something called Ask Stacy, and that is going to be any question you have. I definitely want to be able to answer it the best of my own ability. She may also bring back Tammy Kane. And Tammy Kane is totally my extra. I have so many, you would think that I am bipolar, a tripolar, or a whole polar, a quad polar, back of this show. And then there's also going to be some serious pieces. The word of the day today, boundaries. I was challenged today in a group that I am a part of called, that is an empowerment, group for people that have been survivors of sexual assault. And one of the things that we brought up in our conversation is about boundaries. And one of the boundaries was about time management. I am horrible, horrid when it comes to time management. This came in, and I mean, let's not put any excuses to it. The journey started around once I turned 18 or maybe a little bit before that, because I'll bring up about the, sexual assault kind of opened up the idea of not being early and on time, because, one day that I was on time, trying to go to school, I saw my, accuser on the train. And it freaked me out. It freaked me out. And I'll say SA because I think people would like to be utilizing the word assault. So SA. It freaked me out. Couldn't take the train. I was flipping out on the train. I got claustrophobic. It was just a lot. So I then decided to just be late. And then it felt so good to have people waiting for me. I felt that I was being valued because of that. And I enjoyed the fact that they were sitting angry as they are, but I felt like I was a star. And it's a sick thought to think. But you walk in late and there's just people there already. And you're not waiting to, like I used to before when I was always on time. picking up things, helping clean up, watching stuff, you know, being a part of the early bird committee, I didn't mind doing it. But then I realized that people would show up whenever they felt like it, and they would be entertained while you're running around like a crazy person. So I wanted to be that person, to be entertained. The narcissistic portion of my life, that started from there. And then when I had children, oh, wowee. When you have kids, if you're not an organized person, which I claim not to be at all anymore, one thing that they do, I would like, okay, well, we're just going to be late. I mean, I literally get into church. I will go to church and be there just for like 10 minutes and feel like I got the best time in my life. And everyone around me is like, well, we were expecting you to be there earlier and you didn't show up. And I'm like, what is your problem? I got here. So I am dealing with accountability and about boundaries. And so my word of the day is having boundaries, setting boundaries and expectations, and time management for me is a huge thing because it relates to every single thing and aspects of my life and series. Next topic for us to discuss and why I decided to reinvent the Broken Popcorn series and to talk about our Broken Popcorn era. So, the conversation is needed. The idea, and I brought it up recently, I just shared a story about one reason why I got out of the podcasting game, and I have a couple more. I have some ones that are juicier than that. One of them, the first one, or not really necessarily the first one, because when I really think about it, when I was working for the record label, working through Sony, so it was a small entity, a small organization that was also the way a concept of seeing people. Let me go back. This whole Diddy thing triggered a lot in me. I listened to a whole bunch of people talk so much about, why didn't Cassie talk about this a long time ago? Why were Cassie so afraid? What made her now is a money grab? Everybody's money grabbing. It's a whole bunch of people money grabbing. Da, 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 da. And I've had my own experience with people that are in power or in music industry and watching how they interact and how they treat their people that they work with. So I've actually met Diddy. It wasn't a long and detailed connection, I would say, or intimate conversation, but it was enough for me to know, like, nah, I'm good. And so he approached us to do some stuff, all of the colleges. So in New York City, before Bad Boy had become this big conglomerate, before I know that Mary J. Blige had to have been out. Jodeci was out already. It had to either be Biggie was now coming out because it was like 94-ish. So if that's 30 years ago, it was around the same time that Diddy was out. So I was in college. I was one of those spitfires, firecrackers. I would say what I was thinking. And I was the president of a black student organization. We called it Malimo at Fordham University at Lincoln Center. And at the time, we got this message. It was two messages we got. One was from Rockefeller, because Rockefeller came out around like the 95, 96 time frame or 97 time frame. So I was still in college. So it was between 93 or 94. So it had to probably the time with Diddy had to be like 95, 96 section. So they all were like reaching out to us to try to get college tours, because college tours for a lot of those record labels back then, and anyone that knows about the music industry knows that back then you first start in local areas, you go into local markets, you would go into college, and college was where you would determine if this music is going to move, because for some reason, the college students would be the ones that would be playing the music all over the place and then go to parties. So we were really the life of the party in making and synergizing music, which still happens. Like when they look at college tours, they look at getting college age people to really move music in the industry. So even like the downloading of markets, SoundCloud areas, those things come from the youth. Like they really want to traffic music. I call it trafficking. It is trafficking. Traffic music throughout that. So their idea was to get onto these schools, get some generated, movement, and then develop these artists would get their ability to do these promotional tours. And that would be through these colleges. That was one part. The second part for Diddy's, or Puff Daddy at the time, Puff Daddy had the Daddy's House, right? And he had a nonprofit organization that was also working with Sister Soulja. So Sister Soulja, who wrote the Coldest, was it Coldest Winter or Coldest something? My friend has read both of her books. I, because of that experience of meeting her and Puff Daddy at the time, or what we call Diddy or Love, is the reason why I did not want to work with them both. I found that the day of that event, which was in Columbia University, so they invited all the schools, all the CUNY schools, all the private universities, and then also trying to get them to be a part of the nonprofit organization, the Daddy's House organization, which is the nonprofit organization, trying to utilize our locations, the schools, to do for free, have the students that are in the underrepresented areas to come to those locations and get them to bring the students in for tutoring or for classes or educational things, which was a great idea. My concern was that they also wanted to just use our schools. So all of these students from other colleges were excited about this. It's like the first time getting to meet Puff Daddy, meet Sister Soulja, and all these new artists. Everyone knew who Diddy was because of the fact that he was well known already in the market. In a lot of our communities we had already known about the incident that happened at the school, at one of the colleges where they had the trampoline, and he was somewhat what they would consider as being responsible, as well as allegedly, and as well as the security not knowing how to handle that crowd. So all of that, we were aware of that from that by that time. And so he was trying to reestablish himself in the New York City market because his name had a stain on it for a long period of time. So when they invited all of the schools to come in and really like discuss ways that we could be involved, and it was just like kind of giving you this, and everyone's eyes are open except mine's and maybe two other in the other school or campuses that, you know, the CUNY schools were all down with it. They were like, yeah, we'll definitely, you know, you guys can use our locations, and I could see that Sister Soulja, her attitude, allegedly, for me, I took it as just it was going to clash. If we were going to do anything with her, it was going to be clashing. And the fact that they were trying to use our locations for their events, or not really events, and it wasn't even just for the school, but if they were going to do any other things with their artists, they were going to use our schools. So I proposed, if you're going to use our colleges, can you also give us opportunities to have some of your artists come to the school for free? Because we're not paying you. You're going to come to the school. We're going to allow you to use our schools to do your events. It would only be fair for your nonprofit organization. It would only be fair that your artists would also be doing stuff for us as well. Diddy said, like, she's unopened. She has opened the chain of smartness in this room. And I saw him give me a look of like, yes, sister. that would be something that we could consider. He's like, oh, can I get your number? And I'm like, no. We'll talk to who was a part of his, or, you know, who was a part of his actual group of people that was with him. It was like a party of them. And we'll talk to Sister Soldier, if that's the case, if we want to get involved in the process. But again, for you to get us to do one, we gotta, you know, you one hand washes the other, right? So, and then he gave me this look of like, intrigued. And at the time, my son's father was my friend at the time. We weren't dating. And he was offended by like the fact that Diddy was trying to like, you know, smile at me. And he was standing right next to me. He was like, yo, that's how you know. It was like this whole part of disrespect. And I was like, dude, he ain't caring about you. We're talking about business. Years after, I could see, I knew people that worked for him or worked in that industry and worked in the industry, entertainment industry. And if we have all heard the story that he is not the nicest person, that he would fire he would fire everyone on the spot. And a friend of mine was like, oh, I was telling her, could you give me an opportunity to come and work for him? Even though I had his number, I probably would have had his number if I had asked for it or whatever, but I didn't feel comfortable. My mind said, no, stay. And what ended up happening is I had some people that was like, okay, it would be great if you worked up, you know, worked there. On top of that, let me roll back because I'm starting to make no sense to my own self. I worked at a record label. Working on the record label, I met people that worked for Bad Boy. And at the time, Bad Boy had one of the strongest promotional teams that was in the country. They literally would plaster posters throughout New York City, throughout the tri-state area, all over the place. And their street team was the best, okay? His street team was the absolute best. And so I knew a few of those people that worked with the former company that I worked on, and they became a part of his A&R group and also a part of the the team that did a lot of the street team portion. And I was asking them, hey, could you help me? Can you help me make sure that I can get down with him? And they all were like, nah. As a female, nah. I'm not promoting it. And there's so many times in my life that I've had people that have superly have come back and said, I don't think it would be wise for you to do that. Or you're too much of a good person, or you're doing too much. You're doing some real good work, or you are too. I think that you hanging out with X, Y, and Z, or these people are drinking. I don't think you should be hanging out with that person because they're alcoholics or they're smoking weed. You are doing too well in this. We don't want you in this space. And they were like, nah, sis, you are too, this would not be the place for you to be. And so like years, decades, everybody that has been involved, whether you're behind the scenes or in the front of the scenes, has heard a story that has been told about people like Diddy. Let's not just talk about Diddy, because to me, Diddy is not the issue. It's about control. It's about people feeling that they have the ability to manipulate and maneuver through spaces and hurt people and not give a gosh darn about how they handle or mistreat people. It's about being able to look at a society that is okay with sex trafficking and has been trafficking people for thousands of years. Let's just be real. It's even apparent in the Bible. I mean, you had people, there is a whole story, if we want to go about like really do biblical times, where people are literally, Moses They are slaves working hours to build things for the Egyptians. Do you think that there wasn't any sexual violence in those spaces? Of course. Of course. So this has been centuries that we've dealt and experienced. So why are we unforeign that this could happen in spaces that we are associated with music, that people, these people are like this? So why do we assume that, no, this person can never do this? And why haven't these women said anything? Why haven't they? Well, I don't understand why they didn't wait till now to say something. And it bothers me when I hear that. And the reason why I say it bothers me is because I've experienced it. And the reason why I haven't done, I've had to struggle to be a part of the podcast world, and being, you know, and wanting to get into radio or doing what I've loved since I was 6 years old, being in front, listening to the radio station and hearing my commercial being on a radio, and all of this happening because I have to deal and be subjected with people that think that in power they can do whatever they choose, or that you will accept it because others have accepted it. Because others saw that, hey, this may be the only way I'm going to get in, so I may have to do this. And not bashing those women and not telling them, oh my God, I can't believe you would do that. You should have fought that person. You don't know what happens when you're placed in a position where a person of power has something over you that you desire. It's this dangling thing that they just dangling this over you, like, hey, girl, or hey, dude. There's a possibility that I can stop this from happening. And I'm so happy that I'm going to have the ability to stop you from having the best thing that you would want in your entire life. And you know how crazy it feels to be placed in a position where someone thinks that they can do and say and feel however they want and get you to be angry and upset and emotionally afraid to be able to say what you love and care about. It's disheartening. So, I'll tell you this story, one of the stories, of the time in which I was treated unkind by someone that knew that I wanted something so bad that they stopped it in the next few minutes. Thank you for reaching out to Angel Brooke. This is Angel Brooke's show, Broken Popcorn Series. Okay, so let's get to the story about one of the stories. And I did share it on Instagram, and it's probably on Facebook, right? The incident. Allegedly. I'm going to say alleged because I don't want to call names. I'm going to say this person, and then that person, and then this person. I'm going to call names, but I'm not going to give the real person. So I have a professor. Her name is Professor F, right? Professor F was an African-American teacher who was at Rose Hill in campus in Fordham University. She had been there for some years. I don't know how long Professor was there. She was one of my best professors, because I can tell you, as an African-American woman, I may have had on my hand maybe 5 or 6 teachers that reflected my skin hue or looked like me or talk like me. I rarely had a woman teacher. She was what I wanted to have. I mean, like, her knowledge of the radio industry and the radio history was so wonderful. Like, she literally would dissect the book of all the different favorite newscasters and disc jockeys. Like, she would, the introduction of radio for me going to that class was one of the best experiences. And I had to go through a lot to get to her class. So I literally would have to go from Brooklyn, get to 59th Street, then from 59th Street, take a Ram van. They call it Ram van because we're a Fordham Ram, right? The Ram van would then drive me to the school, the campus. And, of course, it was a hit or miss when the timing, when you get on the Ram van, because there was always traffic in the midday. And I would always end up being in her class late. So, premises, I'm the only black girl in the class. Only black person in her entire class. And I'm showing up late. And I'm telling you, you see what I'm talking about? But this time it was not my fault. I was actually showing up on time. Showing up on time for the school at Lincoln Center. So I couldn't like leave straight from Brooklyn and go straight to the Bronx, which would have been easier to do. I had to stay for my class and then go head up. So I had no way to like stop that from being late. And she literally would wait until I got in to start class. So everyone that was late, anybody late after me was getting in trouble. She would literally mark you down as like, but if I showed up, class starts. If we had a test, she gave me extra time to finish it up. And she adored me. And I mean, she was like holding me accountable for if I was, you know, like doing my work and stuff. But I loved that class so much that I would study. I studied that book in and out. I knew everyone I needed to know in that book. I was so proud of the fact that I was doing absolutely well. I had gotten my grades when it came to writing was a challenge. And so my grades was at like an A- when it could have been higher than that. But so I kept in contact with her. We had a bonding experience in which some white boys that went to my class called her the N-word. And I was walking to the Ram van. And because I used to dress like a tomboy, had a hoodie on, they didn't know if I was white or black, or they didn't care. And they called her an N-word. And I was shook because it was dark at night. My class actually started, now it's coming to me to come into my fruition. My class started at 4:30 in the afternoon and it ends at 6. So now we get on the Ram van, which would be late at night. So it was a little darker. And I told her, I said I was shook because I was the only one walking by myself. I didn't feel safe. And when they realized that I heard them and I turned around and looked at them, they all froze. No one said to the fact sorry for what they said. They were all shook. And if I could remember their little faces at this point, if I could remember their faces, I would have made sure they got kicked out of that school. But I was so scared because it was a group of them. It wasn't just one. It was like five of the kids inside the class. And they were mad because she failed one of them. Was failing one of them. Because we're doing his work. And who knows? They're probably on a national syndicated station right now at iHeartRadio having a show playing their own, doing their own thing right now, probably making more money than I could ever make Daddy Warbucks money at this point. So let me shut up, okay? Because that's the type that work in those type of places, so we're going to leave this alone, right? So all I will say is this dude, so years after, she's like, don't worry about it. This is what happens in these type of situations. And she mentored me throughout that class. I kept in contact with her. I was asked them, Professor F, can I keep in contact with you? And she said, absolutely, my love. And to this day, she is still one of my favorite professors. She is still one of my friends online. I treasure the fact that I know her. And so years go by. It may have been like 5 years after. And I was still trying to get into the music industry, still trying to get into the radio industry, trying to figure out where I fit in, because there's one part of me that wants to be an A&R, to become, management. And then there's another part of me that's leaning into radio, but always in radio. and I'm trying to figure out where, you know, and I call her one day and I said, hey, do you have anyone that I could probably talk to, maybe have information, do an informational interview with that could probably help me get into a space, you know, learn something else, and get some guidance. So prior to me graduating from college, she used to have some of her friends that she was really close with that were all minorities or underrepresented individuals or people of color come to the school and speak to us about being in the radio industry or in the entertainment industry. And so there were three cards she gave me. It was one person that worked for, was a sales representative for WFAN. There was another person that was an actual, I think she went to Fordham University, but I'm not 100% sure. But she used to work at a jazz station. Oh my, I forgot her name, and I'm gonna kick myself in the foot, because she was at that station for years, and then also did classical music. And so she wanted me to keep in contact with her because she was like a good person to kind of speak with. And I ended up meeting up with her, going to the jazz station, ended up from there trying to get a job at the radio station as well. And because they already have like, you know, in back then, and they still do the same thing. If you have one in there, we're not bringing in another sister because we don't want too many of y'all in here. We just need one, you know, to make our affirmative action a quota. We don't need a whole lot of y'all because a whole lot of y'all's goods, it reaps for drama. We only need one. So she, so what ended up happening is and then it was a third. It was another program director, manager or director for a station that had a AM and FM station, but they did Caribbean music and then also got, R&B and hip hop and all this other stuff. So they split that. So I met with all three, right? For me, FAN and working for FAN, I love sports, but not enough for me. And it was going to be more sales driven, but then I would have to push myself to get to know people that worked at there. And it was much more white focused, meaning I would have to really bust my tail hard to get on that ear and then also know what the heck I was talking about. And that was not my niche nor my expertise. And I didn't want to put myself into a position where I would have to, I didn't think I was going to do well in that at all, right? So, so what I ended up doing is I after 5 years, I kept in touch with her, spoke to her one day, and she told me, hey, you should reach out to blah, 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 who you spoke to before. There may be an internship since you are old, you're more mature, and you're working now, and you're thinking about, at the time, I was thinking about making a career change. I was thinking like, hey, I really should get into this radio thing back again. I really should try to figure out how to get into this. I really need to focus on into doing this. I need to figure out how to get to there. So I reached out to her, asked her if she could help me. She gave me the number of the program manager. I called him up. He was like, hey, no, it was the last time we spoke was blah, blah, blah time. Show up, like come to the station. Let's talk. Let's do an informational conversation. Maybe I could get you an internship at least, you know, like so you could rebuild yourself and your confidence that you haven't been working in, you know, doing any engineering work or cutting or any of that. Let's get to that process. So I came in and they all knew that my desire was to be a disc jockey. I had saw what I had looked at. What someone like a likes of Wendy Williams had, and what we can say all we want to say about Wendy, about her being a gossip, too much in gossip or damaging or whatever. But one thing that Wendy was good at, and one thing that every person that was in the radio industry was marveled about how she did this and how she really was the queen of radio. She did not ever need a co-host. She didn't. When she even had Charlamagne on there, the God on there, that was because it was being forced on her. She did not want anyone else to be running her boards. She could run her own boards. She could put in her own commercials. She knew from top to bottom how to handle and manage her stuff. And by herself as a personality, she succeeded. She did excellent. So all of us are like, hey, Wendy did her thing. That's why it's so sad when you listen to her story or you watch the documentary, which I watched it because that was my, I admired her. I admired her. Did I admire some of the things that she did? No. Did I want to be similar to her? No. I wanted to have my own niche. I wanted to have my own feet in the ground. But one thing I can say about Wendy, she worked her butt off. And so to see her life going into the direction that it went to and to see that she doesn't have is heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. So let me go back to my story because I'm going to go in another direction talking about Wendy Williams and we'll probably do something on terms of that. How sometimes getting your own sister's friends, they don't always help you, right? But that's a story for another season. Okay. So went in, had the interview. He said, there are some slots. And since you are working, it's going to be hard for you to do the weekday because I could actually get you early in the morning. You can come in and whatever and work. But it's because you're working. Let's try to see if we can get you to do the weekends. Weekends, these are the times that we have for the weekends. It's this location or the station works out of Queens. So you're going to have to travel to Queens. And I was willing to do that. I mean, literally was living in the Bronx at the time. So I would take the train from the Bronx. And then I don't want to say what station it is, but it's going to give you a clue of where I had to go. If you're a New Yorker and then travel on a train to go to Queens. And Queens was the epicenter for a lot of the station, a lot of TV studios were in Queens and like that Astoria area. And some of the radio stations were in Astoria area as well. And in New York, in the lower part of Manhattan. So I had some experience in going into both. So when I went to go work for Go In, I was going to be an intern. So that meant I wasn't going to get paid. And I was okay with that. I just wanted the experience. And I also wanted the opportunity that there was a opportunity if I did really good that, you know, things could work out from there. And so I didn't even have to interview. He was just like, no, girl, I can get you into to meet with the, because he needs an intern. Premise. They knew. And then I'll get to what they know. You'll work with X, Y, and Z. He's cool. Learn as much. And, you know, we'll see what happens from there. So I go in the first day I get in. I'm like, all right, let me make sure I get dressed up. Because I learned from my grandmother that you always get dressed for your next opportunity. So you don't come in there in jeans and sneakers. If you got to come in. I literally worked. I laugh now. I literally work at the grocery store, right? In a suit. With heels, girl. With heels. Not even loafers. With heels. Some high heels. A two-piece suit with heels on my first day. And the people are looking at me like, because our parents, Caribbean parents, Trinidadian parents, don't believe that you should ever go looking mashup and looking crazy at your job. You must get dressed up. So I got dressed up, went to work. So I was dressed up for this first day. I put on a suit and then he was like, oh, you look great. You know, you'll be working with me. It's just me and you, or, you know, on occasion, there may be one other person that may be there, maybe the engineer or some, you know, people, because there was only sales reps that will come into the station, get their kits or get whatever they needed to, and then leave to go to meet with their clients. So rarely was anyone in there besides you, myself, and this radio personality, because the radio personality was able to do his own boards, was able to do, but he just needed someone to answer the phones. So beginning of my first time frame was answering calls, taking down information, and then making them win prizes. And then in between those time frames, he would show me how to use some of the stuff. So for a while, it took him, he wasn't a very trusting type person per se. So he was trying to kind of edge to find out whether or not he wanted to give me access to learning how to do the commercials, because he didn't know if I was there to come and take his job. Who knows, right, at that time. But he would show me a little bit of things, and I'm the type of person, I'm a creature of watching other people and researching. So as he's doing certain things, I'm just watching him repeatedly doing it, and like, okay, he has to do this, he has to put this in, he has to do this, time here, just got to pick up the phone, call on the phone, talk to someone, and then blah, blah. So I was watching everything he was doing, and then as we went on weeks and weeks, he started giving me little and little more to do. On top of that, I was at that time the type of person that was relentless. Like, you're going to teach me. I'm going to be up in your foot. I'm going to learn. I'm going to keep on asking you questions. You're going to show me it. I'm going to smile at you, writing down notes. So answering the phone, first red flag was this joker had women calling. He's not good looking. I'm not going to say that he's not ugly, but he's not right. That's what I'm going to say. If you can see what my face look like, I mean, he's much older than me. So he's like about maybe, he has to be like 18 years older. So me, he's a senior. He's more mature. He could be my father. He could be, he's going to be someone that's going to give me some guidance. He's going to give me mentorship. He's going to provide me with a direction. You know, like, you see all the things I'm talking about. I'm not seeing him as he's going to give me a kiss. He's not going to think that me and him are going to hold each other's hands. I'm not thinking that he's thinking that we're going to ever have sex in entire life. Like, I'm thinking, no, heck no. And on top of that, on top of the fact that women are calling constantly because his voice, he has a charismatic voice. He sounds like Billy D. Williams in his prime. He sounds like Denzel Washington in his prime. He sounds like a voiceover person that you're like, ooh, yes. But when you see him, like in most people in radio, you're like, ooh, is that Gollum from the Lord of the Rings? Is that, I'm trying to think of somebody that's just like horrifically looks crazy. Like, no, he's not cute, right? So you're thinking that, like, no, what are you calling for? And why are you, oh, I mean, literally, oh my God, can I speak to him? Oh, is he on the phone? Oh, could you tell him that I didn't get my prize yet? Could you tell him that? Oh, I'm just calling about that. Oh, I hope I win. Oh, tell him that he's so handsome. Oh, and I'm like, what? What? And so on top of that, his wife, I find this out 6 months into our time of working, that he's having a whole baby. His wife has to be around my age. So she was young. She was young. She was like, it was like R. Kelly. He had the R. Kelly-ish vibes because she was super young. She would call on the phone and be like, oh, you know, when you're coming home, could you please buy milk or buy something? And he would, like, talk on the phone. But he would always, like, kind of shut her off quick so he could go talk to these other women, a random woman be calling on the call. And I'm just sitting there going, wait, okay. So I'm not thinking, again, this man has a wife. He just had another kid. He already had like 2 or 3 kids before that. So he's has tons of children. So I'm thinking, And he looks like he could be my father. Why would I think that he's even looking, entertaining me as anyone, as a mark? So later on, we're working together, and he would make like these little comments, oh, you look pretty today. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And I would just continue doing the work because it was like two rooms. One was where all of the mixtapes or mix CDs that he would also bring in his own music. So he would get someone to mix the CDs because he was really good at mixing music. So he did his own DJ mixes on the week, or he'll make one that he would use for like every week kind of, and then interject some songs, the top 10 songs that were for the week, weekend or week. And then he would play them. And so I'm sitting there. I'm actually doing the, now he's giving me the opportunity, because at one point he's on the phone talking to all these women. He's talking to all these people. He needs someone to help him, right? So he goes, because before he would just let me sit there and watch him and I'm taking notes for a couple of months. And finally he's like, all right, Stacey, you know how to do this. You've been watching me all the time. So come on, it's time to go. So I'm now putting in the spots. I'm answering the phone. I'm really like getting involved. At times he would kind of have me go on a call, like talk while he's on there, because we were like piggyback. It was like, what you think, right? And anytime I would go on there, the more women would call, because then I like get upset, like, hey, who's that? Right? And I'm sitting there putting in a spot. And I did not pay attention, because most of the time he and I would be moving back and forth in the room. And so I had to pass him, and I went to bend to put in the, not bend, but just leaned over to put something. And I just feel him leaning into me too, and then licking my ear. And I turned so fast that I just lifted off a punch. Lifted off a punch, lifted off a kick, and I moved him, pushed him all the way far away from me. I was like, what are you doing? And at that point, the disgusting feeling of someone licking your ear when you are not looking for them to lick your ear, and where he licked my ear was like going into the earlobe, and I was like, yuck, right? And I'm like, this is disgusting. So now I go to the bathroom. I'm shaking. And I'm supposed to continue doing. And I'm like, why would you do that? And he was like, oh, you know, oh, you just look so good. And, you know, I thought you might be interested. Oh, I thought you would probably like me. I said, why would I, have I ever showed you that I liked you? I told you I'm getting married soon. And on top of that, we had talked so much about like my career, what I wanted to do. And he gave me this dangling, this idea, opportunity that I could probably most likely get it because of one of the people that working on the show was leaving. A couple little women had left, and that he was going to put a good word for me. So the week that he said, I'm going to put in a good word for you, the weekend, was the same weekend he was going to put a word in for me if I did what he wanted. I got up, I went and I rinsed out my ear as if I was, it was like fleas or ticks in my ear. I literally pushed him, put the carts in, and then we had a couple of minutes in between that time frame. And as I'm doing that, I don't know how I had enough time to go to the bathroom, wash my ear, do all this other stuff. But I know in seconds, I was moving that and also taking my bag. I literally had my bag, I had a big purse because I was coming all the way from the Bronx, and just put my stuff in it and was getting ready to leave. He then stopped, put on another seat, he was getting ready to now put in the tape, like a mixtape. So he would play like music, mix music, but he had to do those copies. So you have to, by FCC, do those, and also by, people are all buying spots. So you have to make sure that those spots go on at a certain time. So he couldn't stop what he was doing, but he was rushing to get it done because he knew that if I left, who knows what I was going to do. And I was like, I'm going to hurt you. And you better hope that I don't tell anybody else what you did to me. That dude begged me, please don't leave. Can you stay? And this is where I get the concept of why people don't leave. Why it's hard for them to speak up. Why everything that I had worked so hard for and was at this almost close to where I needed to be was now about to be destroyed because of someone else's control on the situation, or just to be just mean spirit, just a change a person's direction, and it was just uncalled for and just unnecessary. Now that I think about it, it was the worst. It was one of the worst experiences it had for me in my career. Besides the fact that he did that, I didn't know if I could leave because I felt like I'm going to lose everything that I'm going to lose my respect. What did I do? Maybe I did something. Maybe I showed something. Maybe I was acting a certain kind of way. Maybe I was flirting. And I was going down the list of it in my head. And I'm like, no, you didn't. I stayed to complete that day. I did. I don't recall if I went back. And if I did, it was one of the most uncomfortable feelings I had. And I do remember him drive, because after that I was so in shell shock and trying to get away, and as a survivor of SA, I was so afraid that he could have done something to me. And to say and the thing about it is people try to exit and try to find safe, so they either fight or flight, and I wanted to leave, and I didn't know how to. I stayed. And I believe he drove me either to the train station and then kept begging me, please don't leave. I know this is so important. I know you want a thing. And I believe I had an interview. If I'm not mistaken, I had an interview to meet up with his co-host and the group. Maybe it was supposed to be like 2 weeks from that time. I didn't go. I guess I'm canceling that. He questioned if I had done anything for him to think. I cussed him out. did I cuss him out? And then he was like, I'm going to go up there and try to beat him up. And I believe when that radio announcer or disc jockey contacted me again, like, hey, I haven't seen you. How come you haven't showed up? Because I didn't show up the week after. I was so scared that I had just messed up everything that I, like, you know, by me hitting him and all that stuff and punching him and whatever. So, he had called me, was like, are you going to show up? And I said, nah, I think I'm going to just pass on this week. And probably maybe I'll come in next week. And it was supposed to be around the same time that I was going to have the interview. So I did show up. I did speak with him. I do believe he drove me because his wife or one of his baby mothers lived in the Bronx. So he drove me from Queens, and we sat on the phone. We sat there and we spoke about what he did and how he shouldn't treat people. And it's cloudy. I can tell you it was the dumbest thing on my end. It was a weird situation. I probably thought that maybe he just didn't think properly or straight, but he intentionally knew what he was doing, and he had done it before. How I knew this is because after I canceled and said I didn't want to work, I specifically remember calling the program manager or the director and letting him know. And it took a while because I think my fiance, he was planning on and beating him up. And I had to save. He was going to get beat up because he's going to hurt you. And like he begged me, please, like just tell him no, you know, da da da. I will never do that to you again. please come for the opportunity to come work for us or whatever. And I called the director and I said, I don't think I can go for the interview. And he's like, why? This is your dream. You wanted to. And I was like, I really don't want to get into it. He says, Stacey, what happened? Because you haven't been there. You haven't been interning. What happened? And I just went off. I said, I don't want to make anybody lose their job. It was very inappropriate what he did to me. I felt very unsafe. I felt violated. And he did X, Y, and Z. He put his tongue in my ear and behind my ear. And he was like, what? He was like, this is not the first time he's done some crazy stuff. Like, and when he said that, I'm like, what? So you put me in an unsafe position knowing that there's a strong possibility that this man... To say the least, I never went back. They did. They couldn't do an EEOC situation with him because the people that did work for him were interns. The women that had complained were not being paid by the organization. And they asked me if I would pursue it. Did you want to pursue it? And I said, I don't work for y'all, because that was the law at the time. I understand why there are people that stay quiet. They tried to get me on another time slot. I was so not there. I was so, as a survivor, it just put me back to my PTSD. I just let it go. I just decided not to pursue, or maybe I would pursue a podcast by myself. I never got the opportunity and navigate through the entertainment industry. I was never protected in that space. I never was valued, even though I knew my stuff. And I knew that I had to do more to get there. And then a lot of the women that did work with him had to do things to get to where they needed to. And I wasn't ready to be that. I couldn't put myself in that position. And so I lost the opportunity I felt then to be who I needed to be. And I never had that space to go into radio. And all that to me could be an excuse to others. When you're trying to heal, you got to release those excuses. You got to stop blaming yourself, which I blame myself up until recent. I coulda, shoulda, woulda. If I had only fought through or went back knowing he was a jerk and he did something inappropriate, maybe I would have been on the radio. That's me. Maybe I would have been working for the radio station that I wanted to. Maybe I would have been on Hot 97. Maybe I would have been on this station. Maybe I would have been, syndicated by now. Maybe that one incident changed everything. Sometimes we got to work through those one incidents. And you still got the opportunity to look, hey, I'm doing this again. I'm trying. To heck, I'm doing it from my bed. The healing journey is, you just got to get back up on top of that horsey and try to run it, ride it till you can't ride it no more. You just keep on riding. You just keep on doing what you got to. You keep on thinking positive. You keep focusing on good things. You keep on practicing gratitude, being grateful. I'm grateful for the job I have. I still get to communicate. I still get to interview people. I just don't do it on the radio. Just don't get to do podcast interviews, but I will interview all the people I've always wanted to, and I'm going to ask them all the questions, and no one's going to tell me no, I can't answer that question, or I can't answer that, because I'm going to make sure that they listen, they do what I want to. You got to open up to your honor. You got to be spend time with mentors and positive people. I'm so grateful for my teacher. I'm so grateful for my mentors now. I'm so grateful for the people that are out there supporting and championing behind me. I'm so supportive of my children. I'm so thankful for my children. I'm so thankful for my fiance who has been annoying me on the DL about just doing a podcast. Just do it. Practice positive self-talk, because I have been negative in my brain. Rock with you. Thank you. Thank you again, Michael Jackson, for coming in and telling me rock with you. We want to rock with you. If you want a new mindset, you want equals new results. And that's what I'm doing through using Broken Popcorn Experience. It was great speaking to you all, guys. I am happy. Any questions about what I've talked about tonight, today, please send it to me and chat. Let's chat on this. Let's work it through. Send me anything on there as I gave you the different avenues for we can discuss. So heck, I will even have you on here and I will interview you. I want to hear your story. I want to hear my story. I want my story and your story. All these stories have journeys and they all coincide. They all come together. And it always make perfect sense. Love you to peaches, not pieces. Love you. Peace.